you know what you're in for, I guess. You probably get some pretty strong reactions wherever you go and deliver this message.
Yeah, whenever you're talking about people's beliefs, whatever those beliefs might be that we identify with, it's all you're always walking on some pretty touchy ground. But like they say, the truth is a blasphemy when first spoken. And time and history has shown us that it's always been that way, and it probably always will be, at least for a while.
I guess we should start with this, is that your book is not meant to supplant any of these other belief systems with another belief system, right?
Yeah, actually, in my book, I say, don't believe a word I'm saying, because a lot of beliefs, whenever you accept a belief, it would be like if you came to me and you're really hungry and you're coming to me for food, and I tell you about this great meal I had last night. Well, it might be intellectually stimulating, but it's not going to nourish you. And that's exactly what a belief is. A belief ends up being a substitute for the truth, and it keeps people from really going out and having the experience for themselves. I know when I interviewed Don Miguel Ruiz, he says, don't believe anybody, don't believe anything. Always have doubt, because that's what starts the wheels turning, and you start thinking again, and you go out and have your own experience. Then it's yours.
Give me the general premise, just as sort of a framework by which we can operate under for the rest of our conversation.
Sure. Premise of the book?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, what started me thinking about this process is I read a quote by Voltaire. Voltaire said, if they can make you believe in absurdities, they can make you commit atrocities. And I started thinking about that and started talking with neuroscientists like Andrew Newberg, for instance, and come to find out there is a similarity of neural networks between a person that has accepted some belief that is absurd, in other words, out of touch with reality and no experience, no history. It takes a lot of mental juggling to support and maintain that belief. Well, that kind of a person is also easily talked into doing things that they wouldn't normally do. So when we're talking about a belief, what I'm really talking, now don't get this confused with like an intention. This is a different thing. A belief that I'm talking about is like the predisposition we have on this whole planet to pretend like we know things that are in fact unknowable. And a lot of times these are cosmological truths of the universe that are really a mystery. But I think over the past centuries and the early part of our evolution, we've had to make up stories to fill in the gaps, because not knowing has been fearful for us. But what's happening now, as we're evolving more into a spiritual consciousness, a realm where we're more at ease with saying, I don't know, I think we're coming to grips with the fact that this is truly a mystery. And we can figure out this mystery, but along the way, be comfortable with saying, I don't know.
Isn't that part of the process, though, of figuring things out, whether it's religion or politics or whatever, science even, is that you come up with a theory and it's tested over time and you either keep it or discard it?
Well, this is the difference between science and religion, because science do put their theories. You could call them beliefs, but they're really a theory or a hypothesis, but they put them up for peer review, and they're always in motion, they're always changing. The trouble is, with religion, so many years ago, and remember, the Judeo-Muslim-Christian religions, the roots of that date back to the Iron Age, and I venture to say that we've excelled in science light years from that particular point. But the problem with religion is we've made it into a dogma and written it down in books, and we can't change anything, because if you change anything, you're destroying the belief. But the trouble is, the gap between religion and science is getting so great. I remember Joseph Campbell saying once that his fear about all of this is that as science keeps going into the future and really getting a grip on the reality of the etheric world and the subtler energies, and religion is left so far behind, that we will have this tendency to eventually drop religion altogether, and that means dropping the stories, the mythology, and everything that goes along with it. And that would be a shame, because mythology has always been a really good way, a good vehicle, to relay one truth from generation to generation without losing anything in the translation or the literalness. Because mythology is based upon something that's innate within a human psyche and the archetypes.
Well, here's my initial reaction when I absorbed your general premise, and it was this, when you're talking about religion, and I'm not an especially avid religious person myself, but that religion has helped a heck of a lot of people over the centuries. It's helped people during very dark times, and you even note that in your book. You say that religion has burned like a candle flame through dark times in our history, which it has. It's also led a lot of good people or people who could be not so good to a good place and into believing, the golden rule and do unto others and things of that sort. And although different religions can be seen as different paths to the same place, for millions, tens of millions of people, it's ended up being a positive thing.
Yes, and looking back, I can sympathize with a lot of the people that have held on to their religious faith and their beliefs, and it have seen them through some dark times. But that was at a time when we didn't have such a grip on the scientific knowledge that we have today. And a lot of times when you have a certain theory or a belief, it makes sense at the time. There's a funny little story about this guy is sitting in a plane with four engines, and they're flying along, and the captain comes on the intercom and says, the number one engine went out, and I'm sorry, but we're going to be up here for another hour. So it was okay. A couple minutes later, he comes back on, and he says, sorry about this, but number two and three engine went out, so we're going to be up here probably another hour. So the guy sitting on the plane says, boy, if that fourth engine goes out, we'll be up here all night. And this is just simple how something can really make sense at first, but as you extrapolate it out into the future, sometimes it gets so far off course, we have to revamp, step back, take a deep breath, and go, okay, where are we at today? And I think when we do this, especially when we look at where our global society is right now, we don't have time to keep wondering about this. We're looking at the exploitation of our dwindling natural resources, the environmental, financial, and social collapse. And in fact, our whole civilization, including the financial structures, are built on infinite growth. And it depends on infinite growth for its survival. But the trouble is, we live on a finite world with finite resources. So that's the problem that we're running into.
And in the beginning of the book, you talk about the state of the world, and I alluded to a lot of the problems we're facing right now. You would say that at the root of all of them, or at least many of them, is a reliance on a belief system.
Yes, and that belief system could be religious, political. We've mixed God and country. Right now, if you're not for the United States, you don't believe in God. I don't know how that has happened over the years, but it has. But these can be personal beliefs too, personal beliefs that limit us. Anytime you have a belief, and this is the important thing to really grasp, is because if you have a belief, you're just pretending that you know something, and it gets mixed up in this pile of stuff that we really do call facts. But after a while, we forget that we started out pretending that we knew in the first place.